We've been trying to talk about for the last, 7 weeks, since this is lesson number seven. 7 weeks been talking about what kind of faith do we have? Do we have a faith that is strong enough to overcome the various difficulties that come into our life, the various trials, various temptations that come our way? And here's the premise, the basis of upon which this class has been studying is in 1 John chapter 5. In verse 4, the Bible says, "For whatever is born of God overcomes the world." And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? Do we have that kind of a faith? We can have that kind of a faith. A faith that overcomes, as we've talked about, overcoming temptation, overcoming discouragement, overcoming discontentment, overcoming fear, overcoming anxiety. Do you have that kind of faith? You know, sometimes these things get us down, but can we overcome them? Tonight I want us to talk about, as we close up this study, and there's so many different topics, obviously, we could have looked at, but to talk about a faith that overcomes grief and loneliness. Are you ever going to experience grief and loneliness in your life? Most of you already have, to some degree or another. When do we experience grief and loneliness? When somebody dies, when one of our family members, when one of our loved ones dies, grief and loneliness. What else do we experience? What else do we experience? Maybe not so much grief, but maybe loneliness. Maybe it doesn't have grief attached to it. Pat? Right. Loneliness doesn't mean you're all by yourself. What causes us to be lonely sometimes? What leads to loneliness? What is, and you'll have to fill me in on this, I've read about it. What is the whole empty nest syndrome that happens? Is that real? I mean, I would think it'd be party time, personally. But I've heard it's real. What's that all about? Is there an element of loneliness that's involved in that for a day or two? A minute or two? I don't know. But that's what I want us to look at tonight, is what can we learn tonight about having a faith, not that does away with these things. It's not that we're trying to say if you have grief or if you're experiencing loneliness that that's wrong, but can we have a faith that will help us to overcome them? What is grief? Here's a couple definitions or synonyms anyways to say when we talk about grief. What are we talking about? We're talking about some kind of a deep mental anguish. And as you said, this is usually associated with bereavement, with the passing of someone. Some of the synonyms include distress and sadness. I thought this was an interesting quote. How many of y'all have heard of C.S. Lewis? Did a lot of writings and interesting individual. And I don't think I have this. No, I don't have this quote up there. Listen to what C.S. Lewis, he wrote this in a piece called A Grief Observed. He said, "No one ever told me that grief felt so much like fear. I am not afraid, but the sensation is like being afraid. The same fluttering in the stomach, the same restlessness, the yawning. I keep on swallowing." Does it sound like grief to you? "There is a sort of invisible blanket between the world and me. I find it hard to take in what anyone says. Or perhaps hard to want to take it in. It's so uninteresting. Yet I want other people to be about me. I dread the moments when the house is empty. If only they would just talk to one another and not to me. I don't want to be alone. They don't have to talk to me, but I just want them to be here." Does this sound like grief? Sound like loneliness? He said, "An odd byproduct of my loss is that I'm afraid of being an embarrassment to everyone I meet. At work, at the club, in the street, I see people. I see them as they approach me, trying to make up their minds whether they'll say something about it or not. I hate it if they do, and I hate it if they don't. And grief still feels like fear. Perhaps more strictly, it feels like suspense or like waiting, just hanging about, waiting for something else to happen. It gives life a permanently provisional feeling. It doesn't seem worth starting anything. I can't settle down. I yawn. I fidget. Up till this, I always had too little time. Now, there is nothing but time. Almost pure time. Empty successiveness. Does that remind you of grief? Does that sound like grief to you? Does it sound like loneliness? Does it sound like things that you have experienced? Is it wrong to experience grief? Well, I hope not. Because when you turn to your Bible, there's a whole lot of people, including Jesus himself, who experienced grief. And they experienced it for a variety of reasons. You know, when we think about somebody experiencing grief, we would automatically think of John 11:35, that Jesus wept. That Jesus experienced some level of grief at the passing of a loved one. But yet it also says that he wept over the city of Jerusalem. Well, that's a whole different reason. It's not because a loved one had physically died, but he was weeping over a spiritual condition. The same reason that Paul said that he had a continual grief in his heart was because of a spiritual condition. And yet, so you have grief when somebody passes away. You have grief over spiritual condition. Look at this passage in Acts 20. If we want to turn and look at a passage, you might look at Acts 20 and in Philippians 2. In Acts chapter 20, Paul had just finished a discourse with the elders from the city of Ephesus. And that took up the latter half of Acts chapter 20. And Paul told the elders from Ephesus that he was making his way to Jerusalem. And it's in that discourse that he told them, but don't worry about me. He said, I don't count my life dear to myself in verse 24. But when he was done speaking to them in verse 36, it says, when he had said these things, he knelt down, he prayed with them all. Then they all wept freely. They all wept freely. I don't know if that includes Paul or not. They all wept freely and fell on Paul's neck and kissed him, sorrowing most of all for the words which he spoke, that they would see his face no more. There's grief. Grief comes in all sorts of packages. When somebody passes, when the elders get up and read names of individuals who are struggling spiritually, that ought to bring about a sense of grief. It does for the elders. Here are some elders who looked at Paul and they're filled with grief because they're not going to see him anymore. And they know that ultimately, he's headed for some very dangerous and unwanted paths. And then in Philippians 2, when Paul is talking about Epaphroditus, he talks about the sorrow and the grief that he had over Epaphroditus, because Epaphroditus was sick almost to the nigh unto death, he says. So here was somebody who hadn't died, but there was still grief and sorrow because he was so sick. Have you ever been there? You ever been with a loved one who they hadn't passed yet, but you were already sensing grief? And grief comes in all sorts of packages. And it's not always wrong that we experience grief, and I'm trying to encompass both of these topics, because while there is some overlap, they're not necessarily the same, nor is it wrong to suffer from loneliness. I don't know if this is the case. I haven't talked to them. But we had some of our young people go to college for the first time last week. Mom and dad dropped them off at college for the first time. I'm not saying they did. Maybe they didn't. But could it be that they experienced loneliness? Maybe they were the ones throwing the party. Or maybe you were the one throwing the party on the way home. I don't know. But is it possible that they experienced loneliness? You ever heard of a college student being homesick? And the mom and dad say, no chance you're coming back. You're staying there. Loneliness. That's a social kind of loneliness where you're isolated. It doesn't mean, you know, it's a different kind of feeling. But then there's that emotional loneliness that we have when we feel like we don't have anybody else that we can talk to. We feel like there's nobody else who knows what we're going through. There's nobody else who feels for us and shares our needs. And that's not always wrong to go through. But grief and loneliness can become a problem, can't they? I mean, if it's not wrong to experience them, can they at some point create some problems for us? What if grief and loneliness take us to the point where we become absolutely useless in our service to God? We become so weighted down in our emotions and what life has given to us that we just become pretty much useless, doing nothing for the Lord and His church. Has grief become a problem at that point? Has that maybe taken us too far? Is it possible that grief can even have physical effects? Is it possible that we can even become ill due to grief, not because of a virus, not because of an infection, but because of our own emotional state? Can that make you physically sick? Yeah, you've known people that have been there. That's when grief becomes a problem. And so while grief and loneliness obviously are not wrong for us to experience them, plenty of people in the Bible experience them, it is possible that they can create difficulties for us. So when that happens, what do we do? And that's what we're talking about tonight. We're not talking about the bad side of this. We know enough about grief and loneliness that we could talk about that. We could talk about that for a long time. What are some things that people do to get over? We're not talking about the Bible yet. We're going to talk about that in the next point. But what is it that some people do to try to overcome grief and loneliness? That's one of the things on the screen. They get involved. It's this social. It's the second one on here. It's this social action where they, to help them get over this hump, to help them to get out of their funk, to try to get them out, they try to help other people. Does that work? Does that help us? Because that helps us to stop looking all inward, and it forces us to start looking outward. Doesn't mean we don't look inward anymore. Doesn't mean we're not concerned about ourselves anymore. But it's that social action where we say, what can I do to help somebody else? We have, and I didn't get a, I meant to today, and I didn't. But we've said for a long time we have over 40 widows in this congregation, and it may be over 50, I don't know. There's a lot of widows in this church. Widowers too, I don't want to leave those out. Is there grief, loneliness? Have you known some of them who have been overcome completely? Maybe that's been you. Just completely overcome by it. And yet, have you known some of our widows or widowers who have taken that route to engage socially, to engage in service, where they're looking for other people, looking out for other people? I stopped by one of our widows' houses earlier this week, and when I got there, she was writing cards to all of the visitors. Why was she doing that? Because that's something that she could do for the Lord in reaching out to other people instead of being all concerned that she was home by herself. Are there things like that we can do? There's this active action here where it may not be that we're looking at necessarily at looking at serving other people, but it's just becoming, as it says there, engrossed in some other activity. And this is usually for the person themselves, where they get engrossed in reading a book or listening to their music or whatever it is that they can engage in actively, exercising or something like that, that'll help take their mind off it. Sometimes people go for this distraction effort. It's not that they're going to exercise and they're going to become active in something. It's not that they're social and that they're serving in something. They force themselves to, they might just go for a drive. You ever known somebody who did that? I just got to get out of the house. And so I'm just going to go drive around the neighborhood. What is that? That's just a distraction. It's just getting my mind off of things. And as you see, some of these can have a positive result. This one, the distraction's more of a kind of a neutral result because it's really not doing anything. It might be taking your mind off of things, but only temporarily. But this is the sad part, and it's called the sad passivity, or however you want to say that word. Continuing to feel badly and doing nothing to positively impact the problem. What is that going to lead to? Well, as it says, it's going to lead to a downward spiral of life. It's going to lead to some of the things that have been talked about this quarter. It's going to lead to this level of dissatisfaction, to discouragement, to fear, to anxiety, to depression, and all of these kinds of things. And that's obviously a negative reaction. Is it possible? We started in 1 John 5. Is it possible that we can have a faith that will help us to overcome these things? Where we might take one of these active roles, we might take one of these social roles, but is it possible that this book, Faith Comes by Hearing, we heard that tonight, is it possible that this book can give us anything to help us to overcome? At some point in our lives, if we haven't already, we are going to experience a level of grief unlike any other. And most of the time that happens when a loved one passes away. Probably everybody in this room has had a loved one to die. And you know that it comes in various levels. When you have, and I'm going to generalize this, and so I know in specific situations it would be different. But when you have a cousin or an aunt or an uncle to die, there's a level of grief and hurt that comes with that. When you have a brother or sister to die, that takes it up a notch, usually. Generalization. That takes it up a notch even more. When you have a spouse to die, that takes it up even above that. And I have heard, and so it would probably again be based upon the situation, but I have heard that the only thing that can survive the death of a spouse is the death of a child. Don't know if that's true. Again, it would depend on the situation, because if you've been married for 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 years, you don't know any other life. Earl and Louise Brown, married for 71 years. He was 18 or 19 when they got married. He didn't know any other life without Louise. It's taken him a long time to where on Sunday he had his picture made without Louise for the first time. That's hard. Amen. It's not that we're trying to remove these things. And it's not that we're saying that there shouldn't be a grief and a loneliness process. But what can we learn from the Bible to help us and to help other people? Well, let me give us about three things that we can remember, and then I'm going to give us maybe seven or eight things that we can do. But here are three things that we can remember. First of all, we need to remember that Jesus went through grief and loneliness too, didn't he? We've talked about him experiencing grief at the death of Lazarus in John chapter 11. We talked about him experiencing grief over the spiritual condition of the city of Jerusalem. He experienced grief. Turn to Hebrews chapter 2. He experienced not just grief, but he experienced loneliness, didn't he? When he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, he intentionally went further by himself to pray by himself. You remember when he got to the Mount of Olives, that he left eight of his disciples there at the Mount of Olives. Then he went a little further with three of them, Peter, James, and John, went a little further with him into the garden. But then he got to a certain point, and he went about a stone's throw further all by himself. And so he intentionally isolated himself, which he often did when it came time to pray. Isolation does not necessarily equate to loneliness, does it? Solitude is not the same thing as loneliness. You know, you can be all by yourself and not be lonely, right? Husbands, be careful how much you agree with that. But you can be all by yourself and not be lonely. But in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus went off by himself to pray, when he came back to his three apostles, that's when I believe he experienced loneliness. Not when he was by himself, but when he came back to them. Why? Because they were asleep. And so when he came back to them, he said, "What? Could you not watch with me for 1 hour?" His heart is breaking, and he says to his friends, "You can't even watch with me for 1 hour." Jesus experienced loneliness, didn't he? When he's hanging on the cross in Matthew 27, verse 46, and says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" He experienced loneliness. And what do the last two verses of Hebrews chapter 2 tell us? They tell us that Jesus did not experience these things for nothing. Jesus did not endure these things just to be able to say that he did it. Look at those last two verses of Hebrews chapter 2, where it says in verse 17, "Therefore, in all things, he had to be made like his brethren." That's not talking about simply being made in a flesh and blood body. Yes, he was. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. In John 1 and verse 14, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16 talks about the incarnation of Christ. But that's not what this is talking about. It's part of it. "But in all things he had to be made like his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself has," what word do you have? Suffered. What was one way that he suffered? We think about him suffering, and we think about what happened in the Garden of Gethsemane. We think about his suffering and the cross, and yes, that was part of his suffering. But what's the one that's mentioned here? When he was tempted. Jesus suffered when he was tempted. He suffered loneliness. He suffered grief. Why did he go through all of that? He went through all of that, the end of verse 18 says, so that he is able to aid those who go through the same thing. When we're going through periods of grief and loneliness, one thing that will help us to come through that is to remember. To remember that Jesus went through this too. And Jesus is our high priest. You're in Hebrews 2. We're going to have this later on the screen, but you're in Hebrews 2. Go to Hebrews 7. The idea of the high priest is mentioned there in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 17. What is our high priest doing? Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 25 says, "Therefore he is also able to save to the uttermost those who come to God through him, since he always lives," present tense, not lived. This isn't talking about the 33 years that he lived, past tense, on the earth. This is talking about he always lives, present tense, right now. Is Jesus still alive? Yeah. What's he doing right now? "Since he always lives to make intercession for his people." What does a high priest do? A high priest makes intercession for the people of God. We have a high priest. We have a high priest who endured everything that we endure, including grief and loneliness. And so when it comes time for him to intercede on our behalf, he is able to sympathize with us. That's what Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15 says. There it's specifically talking about him being tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. But Jesus is able to sympathize as our high priest in everything that we go through. That ought to bring us a certain level of comfort. Second thing for us to remember is not just that Jesus went through these things, but to never forget that the Lord is with us. Preacher went to visit a widow one time and was trying to encourage her. Trying to encourage her, and he said, I just feel so bad that you live here all by yourself. She said, Preacher, I don't live here by myself. The Lord lives here with me. And isn't that the truth? Sometimes we forget that when we're going through all of these things, that you know there's that certain period after somebody dies. There's that certain period, whether it be a matter of days, usually not much more than a week on most counts. There's that period where we've got a lot of people who are there to care for us. We've got those mourners and those encouragers and those brethren who come and try to support us. But usually it's just a matter of days, isn't it? I mean, it's usually the intensity of it. Maybe a week. And then it just drops off. And then all of a sudden, we feel like we're all alone. And that widow said, Preacher, I'm not here all alone. The Lord is with me. Look in John chapter 16. Interesting statement that Jesus makes. I think it was last week that we looked at a similar statement that Paul made in 2 Timothy chapter 4. But look at what Jesus says in John chapter 16. This is in the upper room. This is right before they head out to go to the Garden of Gethsemane. This is just, a matter of hours, maybe 12 hours or a little better than when he would be crucified. In John chapter 16, verse 32, he said, Indeed, the hour is coming, and yes, it's here. Remember sometimes when you read the book of John and it says, His hour had not yet come, His hour had not yet come, Jesus says, It's here. My hour has come. And the hour has come that you will be scattered, each to his own. And you know what you're going to do? You're going to leave me alone. Did that happen? Did all of his disciples leave him? Did they all scatter? Yeah. They all departed. But look at what he says at the end of verse 32. You're going to leave me alone, and yet I am not alone. Wait, you just said we were going to leave you alone. What do you mean you're not alone? Because the Father is with me. We need to remember that the Lord is with us, and I'm sure you can call to mind all sorts of passages. We looked at Hebrews chapter 13 last week, that he says he'll never leave us nor forsake us. Go to the book of Joshua real quick, and we won't take time to read this, but I want you to see something interesting. Go back to Joshua chapter 1, and when you get to Joshua chapter 1, then hold your finger there and flip back a few pages to Deuteronomy chapter 31. So get Deuteronomy 31 in one opening, and get Joshua chapter 1 in the other opening, And what I want us to do is, let's start with Joshua. We can start with either one. I don't know which one has greater impact here. Start with the book of Joshua. Look at Joshua 1, but hold your finger in Deuteronomy 31. Very briefly, and hopefully this is a familiar passage to us, because it's one of the great passages of God offering comfort, because Joshua chapter 1 says, After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, you think there was a period of grief? When Moses died, you back up about three verses in the Bible to go to those last verses of the book of Deuteronomy. And it says there was mourning for 30 days at his death. Here's Moses who passes away. Moses was a good friend of Joshua. Joshua, no doubt, grieved very much the death of Moses. But notice that God says to him in verse 5, "No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you." His friend had just died, and God says, "Don't you worry, I'm going to be with you to the end of verse 5. I will not leave you nor forsake you." Look at what he says in verse 6. He says to him, his friend had just died, "Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide it as an inheritance this land." He's telling Joshua, look, you're not alone. Be strong and of good courage. Look at what he says in verse 7. "Only be strong and be very courageous." Look at what he says in verse 9. "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage, and do not be afraid nor dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Now, Moses had just died, well, at least a month before, depending on the time frame here. God comes to Joshua to reaffirm his covenant, his agreement, his task for Joshua to become the leader, to take his people into the promised land, and he reassures him, "I am with you, be strong and of good courage." But this was not the first time God had said that to Joshua. Go back to Deuteronomy 31. In Deuteronomy chapter 31, notice the beginning of that chapter says, "Then Moses went and spoke these words to all of Israel. And he said to them, 'I am 120 years old today.'" Happy birthday, Moses. "I am 120 years old today. I can no longer go out and come in. The Lord has said to me, 'You shall not cross over the Jordan.' The Lord your God himself crosses over before you. He will destroy these nations from before you. You shall dispossess them." Look at what he says at the end of verse 3. "Joshua himself crosses over before you just as the Lord had said. The Lord will do to them as he has done to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites." Verse 5, "The Lord will give them over to you." Verse 6, "Be strong and of..." Oh, we've heard this before. "Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them, for the Lord your God, he is the one who goes before you. He will not leave you nor forsake you." Then Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all of Israel, "Be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid or dismayed." After Moses died, God comes to Joshua to say, "I will be with you, be of strong and of good courage." But that wasn't the first time he'd ever said that to him. God had said that to him even before Moses died. What's the point? The point is that God was with Joshua before Moses died, and God was with Joshua after Moses died. Where'd God go? Didn't go anywhere. Was it that God just showed up for the grieving process? Was it just that, "Well, I feel bad for Joshua. I think I'll go down there and comfort him." No, God was with him all the way through it. And God's with us all the way through it. Through those times when we sit by the bedside, when we're looking at the labored breathing that our loved one is going through, we need to remember that the Lord is with us. And when we're sitting there by the casket with our loved one laying there, we need to remember that the Lord is with us. Third thing to remember is that the Lord gives you a family. The Lord gives you a family. We know what this family is. This family is the church. And even for those who are by themselves, God gives them a family. That verse is interesting in Psalm 68 where it says, "The Lord places the solitary into families." How can one person be a family? Well, isn't the church a family? God takes the families, like the Higbees that have 40 kids, and he takes the singles who've never had children. He takes the widows and the widowers, and he takes all of them and he puts them in the family. What's our family supposed to do? Our family's there for us. Our family helps us to bear our grief. Our family does what Romans 12 says, and they weep with those who weep. When you go over and try to comfort somebody who's experiencing grief and loneliness, you ever had trouble trying to find the right words? Isn't it interesting that God does not say, when somebody's weeping, come up with the right words to say to them. Come up with that magic formula to make them feel better. What does God say? When somebody's weeping, what do? Weep with them. It's okay to weep with them. When Jesus saw his friends, and you could say when Jesus saw his family, Martha and Mary weeping, what did he do? Weep with those who weep. That's what the family's for. To be there to comfort, to reassure, to share in their sufferings, to comfort them in the ways that we have been comforted by others. Isn't it interesting that there are some who willfully choose not to have this family? They say, I don't want any part of that. And yet how many of us have said, when we have gone through some trial in life, when we've gone through some difficulty, when we've gone through the passing of loved one, how many of us have either said or thought, how do people out in the world deal with this? How do people who don't have the church make it through these times? We got a family, Dirk. And that's the thing that Dirk is saying is that God's promise is to be with us, and so what should we do for our brethren? To be with them. You know, it's not magic words that we're looking for. Remember that quote from C.S. Lewis? It was, I just want people in the room. You know, and if they don't talk to me, great. I just want them in the room. And that's what we need to be there for. We won't have time to develop these, but let me just share some of them or at least read through them. We gave three things to remember, and I really wanted to have more time for these eight things. What can we do to have a faith that overcomes grief? Remember, Jesus went through it. Remember, the Lord's with us. Remember, we have a family. But here's some things we can do. Truly believe that God wants what is best for us. Remember what Jesus said in John 14? Take comfort in the promises of God. Don't sorrow as those who have no hope. You have promises. We can't emphasize number three enough. Pray. And then when you think you've prayed enough, pray some more. Remember that Jesus intercedes as our high priest. We talked about this one a little bit. Number five, serve other people. Help somebody who's going through a hard time. Give them a call. Write them a letter. Get involved in personal work and soul winning. Number six, hang out with true friends in the church. The comment that's made about Jonathan in 1 Samuel chapter 23 is that he strengthened David's hand in the Lord. When somebody's going through grief and loneliness, that's the kind of friend they need. Somebody who will not just be there with them, but somebody who will help to strengthen their hand in the Lord. Number seven, stay busy. Now, sometimes it can just be busy things, busy work. Not busy bodies. That's not the busy that we're talking about here. I know that will keep you busy. But stay busy in the Lord's work. Find things you can do in the church. Isn't that what God says to widows in 1 Corinthians chapter 7? It says, instead of marrying again, you now have 100% of your time that you can devote to the service of God. We can do that. And then study the Bible. And I wish we had had time to talk about this, but I would encourage you to find your psalm. The one that you go to for strength and comfort and relief. I know everybody else has one. You find yours. Read all 150 of them and say, which one can I make to be mine? So that when I need it, that's where I go. Hopefully some of this has helped us. Thank you all so much for your good attention tonight.